Welcome back to our Legislative Update Program, and we continue talking about several different issues this week on the Legislative Update Program. Among those, certainly Representative Walker Thomas, you mentioned several issues, brought up some issues there, and the tax fixes, we'll talk a little bit about that. Still sure. More to be talked about that in the future. A lot of interest in what's going on there. The animal meat labeling bill coming up. Tell us some other things out there that you're working on, too.
Well, you know, one that was interesting that actually affects Lake Barkley, our park, and so many of our residents. I was talking to Commissioner Holland, and apparently we were trying to figure out how this bill got passed so quickly and pushed through to allow the park system to be able to bond up to $150 million.
Yes, uh-huh.
And part of it was money that we're putting in to increase their bond capability. But we are so overloaded with projects from all of our state parks across our great Commonwealth and stuff that we needed this. Apparently, a beam broke in one of our lodges there were people in the building. So some of our parks have that much disrepair. Lake Barkley, I believe this puts money in for Lake Barkley's been in desperate need for a new roof, and it's going to put that in. And I believe it's going to also catch the pool and the fitness area. And then it also has some serious issues with the sewer and wastewater system. So just for our local park, it's going to put money back into it and try to bring it up to just more updated standards right now. So this was a dire need. If we're going to take care of our parks, this was well needed. We just have not been putting the money into it.
And you guys have been putting money into it. The General Assembly has over the last few years, but this gets money in there, more money in there right now, right?
It does. It does. And you're exactly right, Alan. Last year we did allocate $20 million, and that was some feel-good fixes. You know, it was enough to do some painting and maybe reline a pool or some things like that. But we have some high-ticket items that we really had to address, and this is really going to help fulfill some of those needs. It would cost over, I think I've heard estimates of over $210 to $220 million to really bring them up to the Juul standard that they were when they were first built. But this will go a long way for all of our parks and trying to get them back to speed.
Other things going on, I know one thing that came through this week, sports wagering, a lot of discussion about that. Are you guys hearing much from your constituents?
We are. Representative Adam Koenig is actually carrying that bill. I'm not sure where it stands down in the Senate. I've heard rumors that even if it was to pass the House, that it could get stalled down in the Senate. He's been lobbying for it for quite a while. He filed it a week or so ago. I don't know if it would get passed right now. Otherwise, it'd probably be on our agenda. It did come out of committee, but it has not come up for a floor vote yet. So I'm not sure. I know there's been a lot of talks really it's expanded gambling on that aspect, but with our horse track that is so controversial and coming down to Oak Grove area and Representative Dossett's district there, you know, there's it just seems like this is a push across the state to just further the gambling, and I'm not really for all that, so.
You hear much about the concealed carry from your constituents?
I have on both sides. It's so funny because sometimes, you know, when I was sitting there having breakfast this morning with a bunch of farmers up and down, and, you know, I just opened the subject up, you know, to just talk about it. And I really thought all these ag people and farmers were like, oh, yeah, no, it's our constitutional right. But it's mixed reviews. Most of the people I talked were like, you know, they kind of like how it is with the concealed carry. The states that have enacted constitutional carry have actually seen their concealed carry permits actually go up. So because people want to be able to take their weapon in other states, and you'll be able to have that mutual agreement. So and then the argument is, you know, they like to know that people that are concealed carrying have a little bit of training to take their class, and actually to know where you can take your weapon and where you can't. You know, like right now you can't drive onto the military base. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't take it into certain places. And I think that training's invaluable, too. So right now it's over in the House. Senate did pass it pretty overwhelmingly. Brandon Smith, I believe Senator Smith, has been carrying that. And he makes a good argument. You know, he brought up on the Senate floor that there's a lady that works at Waffle House, and she gets off late at night, sometimes 2 a.m. in the morning. And why should she break the law to just have to kind of cover her gun as she carries it back and forth into work? And she doesn't want to open carry because it scares customers. So, you know, so there's some people that, and she can't take the concealed carry class because it's kind of expensive. It averages about $165 in the state of Kentucky, and she can't afford it. She's a single mom raising two kids, and then she can't afford to take off the time from work to do it. So this is one of our founding constitutional amendments that gives us the right to bear arms. So we'll see where it goes.
Representative Walker Thomas, always good to have you with us. I know you have an appointment today, but we appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
And Representative Myron Dossett, we may not want to go into it full length, but I think there would be a lot of interest in what's going on with the tax exemption of the organizations and so forth out there. That's still a work in progress.
Well, absolutely. Of course, we've sent that over to the Senate. With the different types of 501s that we have in place, if each one is handled a little differently, and I want to wait. I know whenever it gets to the Senate, I'm sure that there will be a few changes coming in on that. But our goal, as I said, was to correct what we had in place, because some of what we're dealing with, the problems that were caused from a ruling from the Supreme Court on where to be collecting sales tax, and others were within the revenue cabinet of how they were finding things that were already supposed to be collected but had not in the past. So the one thing I'm going to recommend to all of my constituents whenever we have this completed is to reach out to your accountant, reach out to the revenue cabinet. Make sure that as we move through this, get it in writing from the revenue cabinet. I know I have it there at my shop showing exactly what I'm to be collecting and not to be collecting. And in case I've done something wrong, I can say, excuse me, but this is what I was and it's information. It has the revenue cabinet's letter in, so that will be one of the ways to do that, because we do want to make sure we don't put any more harm upon our nonprofits or our businesses that have been impacted by what we did with the sweeping tax reform we did last year.
Through this whole process, is there a way to simplify it? Can you simplify that to where maybe it's not so many loopholes out there,
I think there will be. I think as we move forward, I know there's as we move through this process, and as we move to eliminate the income tax and figure what we're doing on the sales tax, I think there will be ways that we can simplify this whole everything that we're doing, and that way everyone knows exactly where they stand. This is going to be, as we move toward what we're doing on the income tax, eliminating that income tax, there will be some hiccups that will go with that, but I still think whatever those hiccups may be, in the end, it will outweigh any of the problems that we've experienced, knowing that we start seeing a growth in revenue in the state, a growth in revenue to our local governments because of the growth of population due to the changes that we make. Because, as I said, if we have more, as Walker was mentioning with his legislation dealing with the military pension, a lot of those young men and women are coming out with some very impressive training. They could either start businesses or move straight into a position in any business that they may work at. And it's always amazed me when I go by the industrial parks there between Hopkinsville and Pembroke and see the number of Tennessee license plates on the employees' cars. What if all those individuals actually called Kentucky their home, and what that would do for our local communities and the state as a whole? That's the way to grow revenue. By growing that revenue, we're going to fix the pension issue. We're going to be able to make sure our roads are free of all the potholes that we're experiencing right now. That growth is going to be vital for all of our businesses and for education for the state as a whole.
Senator Humphreys, from your standpoint, you work with the A&R Committee and the Senate as well. What are you guys hearing about the tax exemption, tax reform, and what's going on? And pension, you mentioned a little bit earlier, we might just expand more on what's going on the Senate side.
Well, I'll just say what Representative Dossett was just talking about with the 501c nonprofits, and it was made mention earlier in the group here that, you know, it kind of depended when you call the revenue cabinet what answer you got, and we have to be very clear on that because we want everybody to be treated the same. They should be treated the same. We don't want people still trying to have to figure out ways how to skirt the issue. You know, what's due is due, but what's not should be not leaving the hands of those who are raising money to do good works as nonprofits across the state. So we want to find ways to simplify. Hopefully we can reduce red tape. I know it's part of the governor's initiative is to reduce red tape. And, you know, ultimately our tax code is one of those that's really burdened with lots of red tape. So maybe this has brought enough attention to it that we find ways to work through that and avert some of these collateral damages in the future as we'll have to work on this fix. And maybe this fix is something that will do that, will be the vehicle for that. So there's going to be lots of discussions about the nonprofits with the tax fix. We also talk about the I mentioned earlier, the KERS cost of pensions that will be due and increasing July 1st. We have to find a way to freeze that for our quasis that's just can't pay it. And so that's two of the big issues, A&R. This is a non-budget year, and so it's going to take a lot to open up the budget. And we don't, and I know Senator McDaniels, chairman of A&R, and the Senate does not want to do that. But there may be some reasons that we have to try to, you know, go back in and tweak it a little bit. And ultimately, these two things have to be fixed before we leave Frankfort, or we'll be called back into a special session before July 1st because they cannot go without a fix.
Did I see? And let me interrupt just a
yes,
second.
Sir.
Did I see in the legislation or the bill that's coming through the House, maybe the Parks bill, that there may be some fix for the quasi-government agencies in that attached to that?
There could be, Alan, and I'm not exactly sure. Representative Dossett may know where
my understanding right there, the legislation was filed, I believe it was Thursday, that would be the fix, what we would call the clawback there to protect those quasi-agencies. And because, as Stan mentioned right there, if we don't, we're going to lose. It would be impossible for the sanctuary, which our domestic violent shelter, to be able to stay open. We don't want to lose these type of agencies that benefit. So, and these fixes were all there last year. We lost them when the Supreme Court made their ruling. I have several questions about that ruling, whether it was correct or not. I know I had a conversation with Chief Justice Mitten Thursday afternoon. I've got a piece of legislation that I filed which would turn all of our judicial races partisan. Right now they're nonpartisan. And the response I get back, I've had several people critical of me of it saying that it will create biases. Well, in my view, those biases are already there. We all have our biases. I just want transparency for the entire public to know who they're voting for every office. I was told that it's going to create corruption. Well, I've gone through the partisan process myself for many years, and I'm proud to say I haven't been corrupted and will not be corrupted. If an individual is going to be corrupted, it doesn't matter whether they're elected as a partisan or a nonpartisan. That corruption will happen. But going back there, as I said, that fix was there for our agencies, our quasi. So we want to get that taken care of so we don't lose those agencies. We don't want to do any harm. And that's there. That'll move through, I'm sure, very quickly once we're getting close to the short rows here with the session. So several of these things will move themselves through, and they should be taken care of.
Senator, we can talk about some other things on your mind as well. I mean, obviously, you're watching the tax situation because the counties that you represent, Trigg, obviously, but all the counties in the far western portion of the state certainly need the help to make sure they're maintaining their population and maintain their custody.
Well, that's place. Exactly right, Alan. And as Myron mentioned, we just finished up day 17. So in actuality, we have a full 5-day week coming up, and then I think a 4-day week. Then we get into what we call sometimes referred to as, you know, of course you have concurrence and veto powers and those kind of days. So it gets crazy at the end, but we really have 2 weeks of actual the legislative process going through these bills. And so, but to your point about the population shift, I know I was in the county judge's seat when we did the looked at the population the last time, and Trigg County was one of the only counties that grew in Western Kentucky. I'm not sure if we're going to see that trend again in 2020. I think we'll see a slight uptick, but most of the counties I represent, all besides maybe Callaway County, are going to see population decreases. Some of the river counties I represent have seen significant decreases since I was elected to the Senate back in 12. So you can see that there is a need to find ways to bring opportunities to Western Kentucky. And I know we all drive four plus hours to get to Frankfort to try to draw attention to Western Kentucky. And a lot of folks think Western Kentucky stops at Bowling Green or Elizabethtown. But we do have a Western Kentucky, and people wouldn't believe that when I leave home and go to Hickman in my district, it's almost another 2 hours west of my home. So we have a Western Kentucky, and then we have real Western Kentucky. But these areas are experiencing real issues with population shift, because it seems like everybody wants to be in the I-65, I-75 corridor, finding jobs, opportunities, and we're having difficulty retaining and keeping our best and brightest back in our communities. We have to find ways to do that. I think Representative Thomas's bill, bringing individuals from the military, when you leave Gate 4, you want to turn left or right when you exit Fort Campbell. We want them to turn left, come into Kentucky, stay here, set up shop, have homes and families. But some of the policy that we have changed in the last several years, we think is going to allow us to provide opportunities through economic development opportunities across the corridor in Western Kentucky. And we have to do that, because I was just on conversation with some of our judge executives yesterday from some of our counties in the West, river counties, and of course they're experiencing flooding issues and a whole host of issues right now. And on top of all that, they're, you know, financially strapped like a lot of areas are, but they are really financially strapped and find difficulties just to maintain ambulance services. They've lost some hospitals. They've done a lot of things that lend itself to future prosperity in those areas. And we have to find ways to change that real quick. And, I know the governor, we had an opportunity. He's talked about the investment in Kentucky the last 18 months with the billions of dollars to come to Kentucky. We want to find ways to bring some of those dollars to Western Kentucky. And it's going to be imperative that we do so, because if not, these communities, by our 2020 census, that's going to creep in here real soon. Mm-hmm. Can't believe we're talking about 2020 census already, but we're going to see some real scary numbers, I'm afraid, from parts of our state.
One thing I want to mention before we wrap up here, Representative Dossie, you were on the Agriculture Committee. You guys heard testimony from Commissioner Ron Quarles this week about the meat labeling bill, very important, and he's taking a proactive stance on getting something done here. Very important bill.
Well, yes, and real briefly, I want to add something to what Stan was just mentioning right there. I had a conversation Thursday with superintendent of Dawson Springs Independent School System, and we were talking about the number. We were looking at the number of, he was explaining to me, of children that had left the school system. And his thought was, he wanted to see where these kids had moved to. Because of living in Hopkins County, did they move to someplace to find here within the state, maybe Bowling Green, maybe Louisville, somewhere, for a better job? The majority of those children, their families had moved out of state. There's where our problem is, and that's what Stan is talking about that we're trying to fix. It's that population that we're needing to come in here. So that's our goal. One of the main things, as I said, grow the state, grow the population, grow the tax base. And I will go back in what you mentioned right there. There was a House resolution that passed out of our Ag Committee dealing and Commissioner Quarles was there testifying on this, and it was a truth in labeling, which we were sending to Washington, making sure the FDA regulates meat that is grown in a lab, or so-called meat, I would call it. I don't know whether you would call it meat, because in my view, meat comes either from a cow, from a hog, poultry, That's where meat is. But this was looking at meats being created in a lab. And the fact of what that impact, if we don't have this, our public transparency, our public needs to know what they're purchasing. Also, looking at Christian County alone, looking at Kentucky, knowing that beef, we are the largest beef producer. Kentucky is east of the Mississippi River. Also, we were considering talking about dairy products and what our dairy farms are facing right now. And that not only impacts our dairy farms, but our ag businesses, our feed producers, but that where they're using different things to make imitation milk. It has an impact. In my view, a lot of this is coming from a very socialist agenda that has just come into Washington, D.C. over this last election period, where everything green, saying that cows, because of the flatulence cows produce, is causing greenhouse gas and causing global warming. That's a farce to me. It's those animal rights people, those type of individuals that are wanting to see us move away from ag-produced things like pork, beef, poultry, dairy products, and have them all come from a vegetable base, or us grow it in a laboratory. I don't believe that's the direction we need to be going.
One other question, and we'll wrap things up here. We did have a question somebody submitted to us about just wondering, is there something the General Assembly can do to put more teeth in our laws concerning protection of our officers? Here, just this past week, Hopkinsville officers shot early by someone who had an AR-15 assault rifle. Then another shooting back on Saturday in Glasgow of an officer-involved shooting. What is there something you guys maybe are looking at or working on to strengthen that?
Well, Alan, I wish our judiciary chair was here. Senator Westerfield, he wasn't able to make it this morning. And when you asked that question, I would ultimately defer to him for those kind of answers. But, yes, there needs to be issues that answers to questions like this. Now, you know, we had a challenging debate last week on the concealed carry issue, and unfortunately, you know, when you pass legislation like that or move it down to the House, it ultimately seems like then there's the bad side of things, talking about the gun issue, and this, you know, this was certainly not intended to any way deflect from that kind of concern we have. These are the law-abiding citizens that we were using last week with discussion on legislation. The situation like that took place with the Hopkinsville police officer, I'm glad he's doing much better. I'm not sure what the issue was with the Glasgow situation last night, but ultimately our hearts and minds are with those families through the process. There needs to be stricter penalties for those, because our law enforcement deals with a great deal every day, and we appreciate what they do in our communities. You know, making that blue line for all of us every day between the good and bad, and we have to rely on them to keep peace and order in our civil society. And if we don't, then we turn things over to the criminals. And unfortunately, it seems like these things are in the news quite a bit. And I know you all report on those, and I'm sure you get tired of hearing and seeing those issues across our state and plaguing our state. But I feel like this will be discussed in depth about the issues on police law enforcement. As you know, Senate Bill 1 was passed a few days ago, dealing with school safety issues, dealing with the Marshall County tragedy that took place just over a year ago. So I think that maybe this brings a deeper discussion along those lines.
Senator Humphries, Representative Dawson, thank you guys very much. We appreciate you being with us and appreciate you listening to our Legislative Update program. And thanks to folks at HR AgriPower for hosting us for our Legislative Update program this weekend.
We also hear from 3rd District State Senator Whitney Westerfield, who was unable to join us because of an out-of-town commitment. He talks about the legislation taking place and happening in the Kentucky Senate, particularly from the judiciary side, which he serves as judiciary chairman in the Kentucky Senate.
Well, we've had another busy week passing a number of bills. The biggest on my list this week has to be Senate Bill 85. This is a bill that overhauls Kentucky's ignition interlock device program. These are devices that attach to the steering column of a car for someone who's been convicted of a DUI, and it stops you from being able to start your car if you've got too much alcohol in your system. In 2017, Kentucky had 24,500 DUI offenses, and some of those involved crashes, and some of those involved fatalities. But only 4% of those cases led to the use of an ignition airlock device, something that would have saved crashes from happening, would have saved fatalities from happening. We know that they work in other states, and we just see dreadful underutilization here. And there's a number of reasons for that. And over the last 9 months, an enormous group led by the Kentucky Distillers Association, the Transportation Cabinet, county attorneys, the courts, the defense attorneys, a huge group has been working to make this overhaul work. And we've got a good bill that we know it's going to increase the access to these devices. It opens it up to all DUI offenders, which is not the case today. It incentivizes program participation by making longer suspensions for people that decide not to use it, and shorter ones if you decide to use it. We know these devices can change behavior, and that's our goal. If we can change behavior and keep people from starting their car when they've been impaired by alcohol, then we've done a good thing.
Senator, obviously that's now headed to the House. We feel pretty good about its passage over there.
I do. We may see some adjustment. We will see some adjustment. There's some changes that we ran out of time with in the Senate before we moved it through, and we were anticipating all along we'd make those in the House. It passed unanimously in the Senate, 34-0. Now heads to the House, and I've already been meeting with Representative Petrie, Chairman Petrie, the House Judiciary Committee, and I think it should be fine to go over there. I passed a couple of bills this week that are also important to me, but much less complicated. A constituent over in Logan County asked last year, ahead before last year's session, to pass a bill that would allow a notary public to change their name. If their name is changed through divorce or some other proceeding, they should be able to change their name midterm without having to wait until their four-year term expired to get it done. And the Secretary of State's office wouldn't allow her to do that because there's nothing in law that explicitly says you can. So that simple fix. We passed it last year out of the Senate, and it got bogged up in the House. I've threatened everybody if they try to bog up that simple, short, half-page-long bill again, and it actually passed the Senate unanimously on Friday and now heads to the House, where I hope it will meet again unanimous passage, or hopefully for the first time unanimous passage, and that'll be part of the Kentucky Revised Statutes. And then another bill to address something for sheriff's offices. For a long time, for as long as I can remember, city municipal law enforcement officers and agencies, rather, have been able to operate impound lots. Sheriff's offices can't do that. There have been a couple of sheriff's offices, one in Bullitt County, that's been doing it for a couple of years and has brought in a decent amount of revenue for that office, a little over $100,000 annually. And the auditor's office shut them down because there's, again, nothing in statute that explicitly says they can. And that bill that I've passed today, or Friday as we record this, allows sheriff's office to do that and just borrows the language from the municipal statutes allowing municipal agencies to do it. We still are waiting on pension legislation and tax reform legislation to fix some of the issues from last year's bill coming out of the House. Haven't seen any of those in the Senate just yet, so we're anxiously awaiting those. Still trying to bang the drum about the quasi-governmental agencies. And I think I told you this last week, my biggest concern right now, the most pressing and immediate concern, are the quasi-governmental agencies, those county health departments, community mental health centers like the Pinroll Center and Sanctuary and the other domestic violence shelters around the state. Because if their contribution rates for their employers, those employers, if it goes up to the 80%+, 83% or so that it would be come July 1st, they have to shutter staff and services, or both. And that's going to work an incredible hardship on the people across Kentucky and certainly here in the Pennyroyal region. The Purchase, the Pennyroyal, everywhere else, Barron River, you won't find a place in Kentucky that isn't hurt by that. And there's no one else, no other state government agency that's ready to step in and provide those services. It's a real risk. So my biggest concern right now is that a bill comes through that addresses that.
Senator, what are some other things you're watching this session?
Well, the next big thing on my to-do list is my disproportionate minority contact bill, my juvenile justice bill. It's undergone some changes. It's Senate Bill 20. I was set to hear it in committee on Thursday, but we ran out of time. We now have a judiciary called, special called meeting on Monday at 10 a.m., where I will hear the very first bill out of the gate will be Senate Bill 20. And I'm anxious to get that to the floor. Because of changes I made, I think I've got enough support to get it to the floor at this point. We'll see. It's still an uphill climb, but that's on my to-do list. And I know Chairman Petrie has some bills, and Representative Dossett and Representative Thomas have some bills that are coming. Myron mentioned something to me Friday morning about the tax checkoff, so you can contribute some of your tax refund to Kentucky Youth Assembly. There are other bills moving through that are important to them that they've told me to keep an eye out on. And it's good that you work with your partner legislators in the area, regardless of party. You want to make sure that the House members know what Senate bills are important, and the Senate wants to make sure House members know which bills of ours that are important, because we want to make sure they get through the other half of the procedure of legislative work. The legislature always ramps up as the session wears on, and it never really stops until it stops. And so the pace continues to quicken, and the volume of bills continues to get bigger.
I know you welcome your constituents to let you know what they think about things towards the year and during the last few weeks, right?
Absolutely, all the time. I've gotten a few visits from constituents this week and last week. We had a lot of folks up last week. And it's so good. It is so good to have people from West Kentucky up visiting, not just to be there, not just to see friendly faces, but to remind others that there are places and people that exist west of I-65 and east of I-75. The east and the west tend to be forgotten. And everything between Bowling Green and London is remembered, but on the outskirts we get forgotten. So when people get up here and enforce, show up and descend upon the legislature and remind people of the issues, whether it's about education or local government and health department issues or whatever the case may be, it makes a big deal difference. Just this week, I've gotten feedback from the fiscal court there in Christian County about several issues that are moving out of the House that they want me to keep an eye on over in the Senate, and vice versa. That engagement from constituents back home is key.
And that's this week's Legislative Update program. Join us every Sunday following the Noon News Edge on 96.5, 100.9 WHVO for Legislative Update.